The DL Debate, brought to you by the Dry Arts Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.
Hi, welcome one and all again to the latest edition of the DL Debate, beaming out from Lismonahan here via Canis in the Highland Radio Studios in the mountaintop. Another packed show for you this evening, featuring none other than the greatest full forward of all time, to wear our green and gold, the one and only Tony Boyle, and the maverick reporter that is Jerry McLaughlin, and also a new section on the show. We're going to do a bit of health, fitness and well-being with Vinny Sweeney, a personal trainer and gym owner situated in Derry. That's all coming up on the DL Debate. I'm delighted to be joined by the one and only Tony Boyle. If you don't know who Tony Boyle is, you're tuned into the wrong show, because he is without doubt the greatest 14 that ever played for our county. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Benny. Hey, great to be here.
Good man yourself. Tony, listen, brilliant to have you on. The old adage about never meeting your hero, but I've managed to meet you, not only meet you, play with you, played inside with you, and got to know you, which was a brilliant time for me, and believe me, you didn't let me down.
Ah, listen, it was good times, Benny, when we look back. I do remember that first meeting. I think it was in the Abbey, where you joined the squad and you came in, and everyone was sort of, I think it was after that great county final performance you had against Ballyshannon, and everyone was sort of, put it like this, your entrance into the senior team was a lot more confident than mine was maybe 6, 7, 8 years before that. I was a wee bit more than you were when you landed on the scene, but I'd give the great boost when you landed on the scene.
Yeah, and Tony, your introduction, I suppose, we'll come to it in a minute, was some baptism of fire, but very, very interesting starting couple of games, particularly your start, of course, All-Ireland semi. But Tony, just before we get to that, you know, there's been people coming on here, a lot of people talking about their youth growing up. You're a KG man in the Dunloe area, and obviously soccer and Gaelic was huge in your life, which again is a feature of a lot of people that's played high-level Gaelic. They always had that wee bit of soccer in the background as well. But growing up for you, Tony, in the family, sport was a huge thing, and you were probably, like a lot of us, playing both at equal measure up until you were about maybe 19 or 20.
Yeah, Benny, hey, our family was immersed in KG Rovers. You know, we're a mile away from the pitch, and apparently my older brother Ben, he's chairman, James is heavily involved, he's the manager of the second team. So we've all played, and listen, as you said, when you're growing up, you play any sport that was going. So I was playing soccer with KG and also playing Gaelic with Dunloe. Now, obviously, there was an under-16 county squad going at the time, and I made that, and that sort of developed into minor. But at the same time, I was also playing with the Donegal youth soccer team, and I remember it used to be turmoil on a Saturday when you had maybe two games clashing, the county minors and the county soccer team, and you wanted to play both, but obviously you couldn't play both. It was turmoil, but listen, as I said before, once you made the breakthrough, you know, I went on to the 21s, and Brian took me into the squad in early 1990. And listen, once you made the breakthrough to the senior squad, you sort of knew you had to concentrate on that, because that was a complete different level, you know. But any chance I got, you know, I was back playing soccer. I remember that day where the first championship match we were playing Cavan, and I had met Brian the week before. I was working in Galway, and Brian said it was going well, and that if I wasn't starting, it wasn't going to be up on the Tuesday night for training. I was working night shift, and if I wasn't going to be starting, that I would definitely be in the first couple of subs. The following Sunday, Niall McCall, the chairman and selector at the time, picked me up. Niall, the former national school teacher, and we're only a mile away from the house, and he told me that, listen, good news, you're talking today. But that back in that time, Benny, you could name 9 subs, but you could only actually officially have 6 that could get on. But he told me that I was talking, but I wasn't part of the 6. And to be honest, KG were playing down in the pitch, and I was very, very close to telling Niall, you know, stop. And I wanted to come up. Thankfully, looking back now, listen, I got me luck when I headed on, and I suppose the rest is.
That, you know, Tony, it's very interesting, because it's hard for people to probably understand that after what happened, and obviously the complete, yeah, you know, amazing time of 92, and how that completely changed the county and the look of it, and the way GAA is propelled from that time. But at that time, I suppose, you wanted to play, and that thing of local and lads, your friends, was kind of pulling on you, and even though it would have been a drastic measure, it's funny that even crossed your mind. But Tony, I was just wondering, the Red Book was on there the other week, and I thought playing two games in a day, which I've done a lot of times between soccer and Gaelic, was good, but he had managed three. Of course, Boner would always have to go one more. I don't know, did you ever manage that in a day?
Benny, I would have often done it as well. You know, you'd have played a soccer game, you'd have played a soccer game, and you'd have played a Gaelic game afterwards, you know. And that's the way it was. We wouldn't have paid. Obviously, there was always that tug of war between KGU and Dunlow, but hey, to be fair, we always tried to do our best. You know, the KGU guys were always accommodating. I suppose when I was playing with KGU in my early years, we had a pure soccer team. I was probably the only, maybe me, Paddy Bann at the time, we'd have been only maybe two of the guys who were crossing over to play Gaelic, you know, there's out and out soccer, and that's why they were very, very strong. As it developed then, you know, a lot of your good Gaelic players, Adrian Sweeney, I wouldn't throw Raymond in as a but not very naturally. A lot of your good Gaelic players were your good soccer players, and at times, you know, KG did suffer. But like as I said to you, I was playing minor and I was playing county under 18 soccer, and I would play both of them on a Saturday whenever I could. You know, you're just mad to play. I know we're talking now about burnout and stuff like that. But you know, Benny, all we wanted to do was play football.
Tony, the mystery, I suppose, around Dunlow, and for me, funny thing, I was just talking to a fella last night. I remember warming up with you when I first joined the squad, and we had won the championship the year before, and I was a wee bit probably green to everything. Now, all I knew was Dunlow was one of the heartlands of Gaelic, you know, you always heard about them. And I had said to you, how many championships did you win? Which wasn't a nice question to ask, because you were like a hold of it, eh? And I was like, well, why did I say that, man? I just automatically assumed for some reason that at some point that would click into place because of all the players I'd heard coming from there. You know, of all the teams, Dunlow has always been at the top, but never just got across the line. Is there something there, Tony, you know, particularly with players like you there, that you thought there was a certain year in particular it could have happened?
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, 1996 was a year I would look back on, and that was a year to me. You know, we had a good team. Adrian would have been young, but he was coming through. Raymond would have been involved, and you still had some of the older guys then. And I remember back then it was an old 15 league Division One, and we won Division One that year, and we won the 14 games. We weren't beaten in the league, you know, but we just had this. There was that monkey in our backs, and it had been the late 50s. Obviously, you had the history of the breakup of the clubs and Ross's Rovers, and then broke up again. But we just struggled to make that breakthrough. I think I played at least four, if not five, county semi-finals and lost every one of them. And listen, that year in 96, we came up against Glen, and remember John Joe's, Mark and me, Noel was very influential for them. But Glen had probably played in maybe three, four or county finals that, you know, up until 96 and the 90s. They just had that experience. We didn't. I still remember. I didn't play that well on the day. John Joe had done a good job of me, but we were still leading. We were still leading by 2 points, maybe going into the last 10 minutes. They got what I would still say to Noel, a very, very dodgy penalty. Noel scored it, and they just closed out the game. And that was one we looked at, because in the league was tough back then. You know, when we went through, we went through 14 and lost none. You know, but to not make that breakthrough, Benny, even to play in a championship final would have been great. You know, obviously I managed Dunlow after that, and we lost against Swally in a semi final, so we just couldn't get over that hump, unfortunately.
And Tony, you were all, as you said, under 16, minor, 21s, and I was just thinking back to pre you coming into the Donegal squad. And I was trying to think about, you know, who did you replace, or when you came in, who did you replace? Looking back, that Donegal never seemed to have what you would call an out-and-out 14. A guy was like, that's my jersey, that's my position. And many people would have called you, Tony, I suppose, the missing piece in the jigsaw. Yourself and Noel, the younger guys that came into the squad that really made a mark at that time. But particularly inside, Tony, we didn't really have that kind of target man, go-to guy. As you say, you came in around that 1990 time, and I suppose your debut, I know your start was obviously the All-Ireland semi-final, but you come on against Armagh in the Ulster final, and you must have done enough in training in between that and to make a semi-final team, which must have been a massive time for you.
Yeah, Ian, hey, Benny, that was the thing about it. I would have played, I've seen an old minor, a minor programme for when we, I think it was 87 or 88, and I actually played midfield for the county minors that day, so I would have played, full forward was something I suppose there's another one of your St. Eunan's heroes that would have been in the number 14 slot. Charlie Mulgrew would have been there, and it would have been sort of between Charlie and Tommy, but both Charlie and Tommy were very, very good centre half forwards as well, you know.
So, listen,
it was probably a position I remember coming in. I still remember to this day, as I said to you earlier, about your entrance into your first team meeting in mine. Myself and Noel and Mark McShane and Frank Ward, Brian took us in 1990, and hey, to be fair, it was fairly unforgiving dressing room. I remember being told, here, you can't sit there. Now, that was only the older boys just testing you out, you know. But the other three guys, they didn't stay, and to be fair, only for the Red Fella. The Red Fella looked after me. And listen, once you made the breakthrough, and the guys realised, you know, this man can play a bit, you know, it took, you know, you became part of the group fairly quick. So I was probably Brian probably looked at me as a bit of a target man, and it worked out very well, going well in training. But as I said, I thought I was very close to the team to make the cabin game. Didn't get on. I think we beat Derry very, very easy in a semi-final, and I thought that was the game to give me a bit of experience, and Brian didn't put me on that day. So the day against Armagh in the Ulster final, I do remember Tommy was going well, had a goal disallowed early on, but I knew Tommy was starting to tire, and every time Brian would look at the dugout, I was standing up, and I was sort of, I wanted, if I was man, I'd crack. And in fairness, he told me to get warmed up, and I was out warming up under the old howl, and I was thinking to myself, you know, Brian was sort of lost in the game, which he does. I thought to myself, geez, this man's not going to put me on. I'm going to be warming up here or not. So I headed for Noreen. I says, Noreen, here, Brian's after saying I'm And the next break of play, Benny, I headed. I went on, didn't wait for instructions. I just wanted to play, you know. And listen, I made a small contribution. And believe it or not, it was a soccer contribution. Malloy, one of Malloy's famous balls into the corner flag, launched into the flag. And remember Jerry Reid was a fullback, but he was shepherding it out, and I was coming behind him, and I managed to do a slide and tackle and hook it back into Barry McGowan's hands. Barry knocked it across for Manus, and Manus kicked the one and score. Well, it turned out to be the one and score, so it must have been enough of a contribution to convince McInniff there's a bit of future in this man.
Brilliant. And that's very interesting. You played at midfield for the Miners, because that physical ability you had then, we often see it now with people going into full forward, how well they can be inside because they're physically ready, and then they can be a target man, as you were, Tony. And listen, Tony, you're deceptively strong and fit. Now, you're talking about the old school guys there. They affectionately used to call you Fat Boy. Can you explain where that comes from? Because I can't figure it out. Was that a bit of puppy fat or something?
That's what I think. And as Hegarty would say then, I used to want to well then over the but no, it's funny that I was 13 and 30. I found you find your weight, you know, you find your playing weight, and I was 13 and a half stone when I won All Ireland. Obviously I missed the 1993 championship because of a shoulder injury, but when I came back a half a stone later, but I found straight away that I'd lost that natural power that I had. I felt very sharp, but I didn't have the power for the type of game that I wanted to play, to break tackles and that. So, you know, that 13 and a half stone would have been my weight all through the championship. But then when I was playing at the club, I always wanted to be in the field because to me, you could dictate the game. I could give the tackle ball and to a young age that I know they would like, whereas when I was in full forward, the boys out the field just thought, get it in, kick it in anyway. But I always loved that freedom of getting out the field. Now, a lot of boys would tell you when it came to county level, I was too lazy to go out the field, but I would say 99% of my appearances for Donegal were at full forward, apart from, I remember McInniff in the 91 Ulster final, believe it or not, against Down. McInniff actually took me from we were struggling that day against Down, took me from full forward to midfield, but that was short lived. Listen, there were some monsters around midfield.
That's right.
Only Michael Murphy can do that.
The man Murphy. Tony, just around your debut, obviously you come on sub in that Ulster final against Armagh, but I mean, as far as debuts goes, your debut, full senior debut, All-Ireland semi-final, you know, a rarity for Donegal, and, you know, packed house, Croke Park. I mean, young lad like yourself, were you nervous going into that game? I mean, the great Mick Lyons was down to Markey. I mean, that was some start for you.
Yeah, it was, but again, bringing him back, like, as I said, I wouldn't have been immersed in the whole history of the GAA, and as I said, only ever seen Donegal twice before actually starting to play with them, because I was always playing soccer. But, you know, obviously knew the great Meath team that had been knocking about from 87-88, knew who Mick Lyons was. Plenty of people were ringing the night before and the lead up to it, you know, don't shake his hand, don't look into his eyes, don't do this. So I do remember, listen, I love the bigger the occasion. When you're younger, you don't have that fear or that nervousness about, you know, can you perform? You're just mad for action. But I do remember going. they warmed up in the hull and heading down, and Mick was standing just staring out. Now, he never offered his hand, so I never shook his hand. I was always annoyed, and I said it to him at an All-Star do a couple of years after. But hey, to be fair to Mick, you know, people were saying he was this, that, and other. Not a dirty stroke, Benny. Never opened his mouth. But I'll tell you, when you won the ball, he hit you with everything he had. You knew that you were getting tackled, you know. But, it, you know, an absolute. And I was lucky enough, fortunate enough, as I said, to meet him a couple of years later at an All-Star, doing the most quiet, modest, unassuming man ever, you know. But I was hoping, that was my first. But we played them later in the league, Navan, the following year. And I had a couple of games under my belt, and I was raring to go, you know, would get a crack at Mick again when he'd a wee bit more experience. But unfortunately, that day he was playing midfield, and they'd stuck Martin O'Connell, the great Meath wing half-back and full-back, and that was another tough day at the office. But, no, listen, I to make your debut in a All-Ireland semi-final, I suppose I didn't realise how big it was at the time, and I was just mad to get playing.
And funny, Tony, you mentioned the players that were hard and fair. You know, I found them, the best of them was, you know, like Darren Fair, Sean Marty Lockhart, or even like Conor Gormley. There wasn't any mouthing from them, you know, but they hit you. They didn't need to. It wasn't something that was in their mind. So, Tony, going into 91 then, obviously the Ulster final, you know, big build-up going into Down, and sure, Down, of course, then opened the door in many ways, won in All-Ireland. It didn't happen for us. They got the goal. They pulled away from us. A lot of soul-searching then going into 92. Tony, were you afraid? Those talks of possibly Malloy and McHugh and different people, there was talks of retirement. You've managed to pull it together. Tony, were you, but how did you feel that time? Did you think, hey, there's an All-Ireland in us? Were you worried about people retiring? Or what was the vibe just going into 92?
The vibe, hey, Benny, was, listen, because of the, listen, Down changed everything, because I remember, I even got that sense in 1990, you know, even just being part of the squad, was Ulster was everything. Like, to win an Ulster championship was everything. And then, hey, the trip to Dublin was the bonus. You know, going down to play me was a bonus, even though, you know, we probably put up a decent enough show, but a lack of experience. So, listen, we didn't play that well against Down in that Ulster final. But the minute Down went on to 1-0 Ireland, I remember watching it in my own front room and my mother and father's front room, and seeing James McCartan, who had played against in minor and on the 21 level, lifting the Sam Maguire. And my immediate thought was, James McCartan can win an All-Ireland. You know, why can I not win an All-Ireland? So I don't remember the early part of the 92, but I remember a pivotal week, Benny. We had it was no, I think they'd juggled up the league, but we had qualified for a league quarter final. We played Dublin in Breffni. We were 5 points up going into injury time. In Dublin, we conceded 2 late goals, and like, it was just absolute, you know, it was a game we just absolutely threw away. And even back then, like, getting to league semi-finals and finals were big, you know. So, hey, that was a massive, massive blow to the team. The following week, we had to go to Ballybay to play Monaghan in a McKenna Cup match, and it was hailstones. We got hammered. And to be honest, that the team was at a really, really low ebb. And to be fair to McHugh, the wee man, you know, he did speak up and said, listen, for a lot of the boys in the dressing room, it was only my second year. For a lot of the boys in the dressing room, this could be the last hurrah. We need up the training. We need lift. We need to put in a bigger effort. And that's probably where that, it was funny. It was the dressing room and that McKenna Cup defeat in Ballybay was the first turning point. We came through that. You know, I think we beat Cavan in a tight enough game in the first round. Went to a replay and we beat Fermanagh. And to be fair, you know, the wee man spoke again after the Fermanagh match that we felt, you know, that he felt as a group, you know, that we weren't fit enough, and we picked it up. We lifted the game because we knew that after going one in it the year before, whoever won Ulster, we're going to be in with a good shot of winning it, you know. So it's sort of we gradually went from a very, very low starting point to get losing the 5-point lead against Dublin in a league semi final in injury time, and being hammered by Monaghan, to, you know, gradually developing and getting fitter and stronger and getting a pattern of play. And listen, it probably that day, Benny and Ulster final, you know, I came off injured and John Rasda was sent off. That may be where we developed that, you know, the possession game, because again, the wee man would have back in my time done a lot of speaking, and I had a great connection with him, at centre half forward. That, you know, that's where, you know, he said at half time, we're playing against the wind against Derry, we can't kick the ball away, we can't give the ball away. I suppose when I wasn't in there, I felt, you know, we'd lost the target man. But to be fair, if everyone remember Tommy Ryan's performance in the second half against Derry that day in 82, we wouldn't have won in All Ireland only for that, you know. But it grew game by game. Benny, it sort of grew that year, you know, and obviously it led us back to not a great semi-final, but it was only a matter of getting over the.
And Tony, see the ligaments. Obviously, you hadn't a lot of time. Were you under pressure to make that semi-final?
I was obviously that infamous tackle with Anthony Toholl. Listen, to be fair, I still maintain that, you know, Anthony did go to, you know, fly kick it or volley it away, and I managed to get my hands on it. But so he caught me just below my left knee, but it actually tore, now thankfully not the anterior or the medial, it tore a small ligament at the back of the knee. So I was under pressure, and I spent a lot of time in the tide down below the house, and I was a great believer in the healing of the salt water. And to be honest, I would have only maybe trained for a fortnight before the semi-final against May, and really didn't really know whether it was 100% until I always remember we won the throw-in, and McHugh Martin played a ball down under the old Hogan stand. We were playing into the hill, and I came out and I won it in front of Peter Ford and turned away, got a foul, and I knew then, listen, I'm good to go, you know, because you're always, listen, when you're, I'd have been one of these people, Benny, I would have played no matter whether the leg was hanging off and he just wanted to play. Maybe not a sensible thing to do most times, but I wasn't 100% sure whether I was fit enough to play that game, but I wasn't gonna miss it, you know, something like that. As a nice man when you won that first ball.
That's one thing you used to say to me, Tony, won the first ball. I was listening to you the whole time. Tony, you know what? That poor performance against Mayo, obviously Dublin were watching you, and it set up them to go in as raging hot favourites, like unbackable. Obviously, you had the horrible injury to Shovlin and that. There's a good story about John Joe knocking out the wee red buck. We can't forget that one in training in the lead up to the final.
Absolutely, that was the one thing, Benny, there was a massive, and funny, I was checking back on it recently, there was actually 5 weeks, we must have been the first semi-final, there was 5 weeks between the semi-final and the final, and obviously, through the first All Ireland, the county was going mental, but it seemed to take for ages, it's a serious break between two massive matches, and obviously, people looking for tickets and family members coming out of the woodwork, but the training itself, Benny, was very, very high intensity. I always remembered we were training and Donegal Town one Saturday morning, and it was just everyone was on tender hooks, because it was a great backs and forward session, and Manus was, John Joe was picking up Manus, and McGowan was picking up Declan and the other corner, and whatever sort of Declan came across, and I went to pop the ball to him, and it sort of bobbled a bit, and he bent down, and John Joe was coming across and just absolutely creamed him and knocked him out cold, you know. But because the intensity was so high, we knew he wasn't badly hurt, you know. So it was just a case, McAnuff threw off the peak cap and running and all panicking, and we just more or less get him off, you know, and get someone else on. This is too good, you know. And I did let the roar after Bonner, as he, you know, he was being dragged off with the 2 feet trailing behind him. It reminded me of coming out of McCready's last Saturday night. Bonner, of course, where McAnuff was up in a heap, but hey, Declan was just—he was taking off. Someone else came in, and it was hell for leather, you know. And I know that same day, Joyce and Reed clashed with a fisticuffs. And Rambo chased Murray around the field a couple of times. Everyone was everyone was so high up for it, and the intensity was great, and we, you know, the training couldn't have went any better, Penny, on the lead up to that match. And obviously, listen, Dublin being the hot favourites as well, there was no pressure on us going into the game.
And you know, Tony, a bit like 2014, because it was the Dubs and it's basically their home patch and all the media and of course raging hot favourites as they were then, it just made that day so magical. You know, I just, like, I was there in the canal and myself, and just I think the whole county, I suppose it was hard for you to fathom then, Tony, the effect it was going to have on all those young players and everybody in the county, all Donegal people around the world. It must have been a special occasion when you got the cup back, they don't know.
It was, it was absolutely massive. Like, the game itself, you know, we were, as I said, preparation went very well. We were quietly confident. Now, again, Charlie Redmond gets the penalty. You know, funny, I watched it recently, and we were very nervous in the first 10 minutes, and even some of the balls that would be kicked inside were just, it was nearly a case of just get it in, no matter what way you get it in. But once Charlie missed the penalty, it seemed to settle us more, and, you know, we started to play some really, really good football. But as I said, the one thing I would look back, there was the old clock, Benny, up above the canal end, and I remember Brian saying, always keep an eye on the clock, because it's always, the game's always over between 5 to 5 and, or 10 to 5 and 5 to 5, and I remember glancing up at a couple of times, because obviously we were under a bit of pressure down the other side. Back then, Benny, I didn't travel too far from the edge of the square. I wasn't going to be back helping out, but you're always looking at the clock, wondering when it's going over, and just when that final whistle went, it was just unbelievable. Now, looking back at the 2012 final and how it changed, where the team, you know, the fans weren't allowed on the pitch. I was a wee bit, you know, I would have loved to be able to go on the pitch in one sense in that 2012, but at the same time, looking back now, I think it's better for the team, because obviously in 92, when the final whistle went, the pitch is just swarmed. You can't see, you don't know where people are or whatever. Whereas in 2012, I think it was nice that it's only all, you know, the teams now can get round to go round the pitch afterwards and see their family and the crowd and that. But it was just, listen, it was just mental. And I suppose, and them minutes of winning it, obviously, you know, you're just, it's just over the moon. But you don't realise, I suppose, the effect it has in Donegal people, not alone back in Donegal and people that were at the game, but all over the world, you know. And you do get people saying that, you know, brilliant, 2012 was absolutely fantastic, and I really enjoyed it because I was a supporter. You're fit to enjoy it as a supporter, but people would always say, you know, the first one was always, you know, it was always hard to beat, you know, and it was a privilege to be part of it.
Special time, Tony. And Tony, 93, then obviously got back to that Ulster final, a terrible day against Derry. Again, in the camp, Tony, people talk about the second year and you'd put so much in. It was the first year. People almost expect not to have a year off, but was there a real buzz to get back at it in terms of we can go and do this again? What was the feeling behind it? Because I know that day it was a lottery, and obviously Derry went on, they won it themselves then as well. But what was the feeling in the camp in 93?
Well, I needless to say, we enjoyed it. And back then, you had your 3 National League games prior to Christmas. And I remember myself and Declan and Tommy and Malloy played in the New York Championship. That we went over for a couple of weekends in New York, and they were fun times. I think we got back on the Friday, maybe the Friday before the first league match against Kildare. Let's say not in the best of shape, but we managed to get a decent run in 93, got to the league final, lost to Dublin. So the team, we knew as a team, by going into the championship, we were in a good position, you know. But then just how a run of bad luck, Benny, really culminated in the lottery of the final. Like I picked up an injury, which I got a knock in a challenge match against Roscommon. A knock on my shoulder blade. Didn't think much more about it, but it just so happened on the same night I had a touch of the flu and a virus got into the nerve, and I basically lost the power in my shoulder, and didn't realise it at the time. But I was going to miss. I ended up missing the whole of 93, which was very disappointing that you didn't get to defend, you know, your All Ireland. Obviously, Malloy picked up an injury. Rambo picked up an injury. Noel got sent off in the semi-final. So, like, really, the spine of our team going into that Ulster final. And I seen it recently. And funny, you have different memories. Obviously, I trained with the team. I was fit to train. I was fit to run because I was hoping that as quick as this injury came on, it could go and I could be back ready to go. But unfortunately, it didn't. But I watched the highlights recently, and we actually started that game against Derry. We have had a couple of half goal chances early on, and obviously the wee man had a goal chance later on. So we knew we weren't going to be far away, and obviously Derry proved that. Derry proved that by going on to 1-0 Ireland, we would have felt, looking back as a squad, Benny, there was definitely a second All Ireland and that 92 team, but fortunately it wasn't to be.
No backdoor then, Tony. Funny, yeah. Shades of 2012 again. I think everything just came together for Donegal, no injuries as well, and everything was just right. And Tony, after three Ulster finals in 4 years, it was to be 98 then, and I was playing Lumley at this stage, so we got back in the famous one of Brawley's goal and the push on Noel Fred, and you soldiered on to 2001 yourself and Noel, the famous retirement down in Kildare. Yeah. Hallelujah, as Noel would say. The two of us had put on some shift at that stage for the county, all in all, Tony.
Looking back, Benny, hey, and I've said this, and I know Noel said it as well, 98 was the hardest one to take, you know, because obviously it was nearly, you know, there was a lot of new faces in, yourself and Adrian and Noel Freddie, Damien, you know, a lot of, and I would have felt that was one we definitely, I know myself personally, I didn't play well that day, but I still feel the team done enough to win that day, and I think that could have changed the course of a 3-1 and also championship. Obviously, there was very good players coming through, but again, it was just getting that monkey off your back and winning that Ulster title, and that was so disappointing. Now, obviously, Declan, and like you know, Benny, Declan never let a stone unturned that year and done everything, and I suppose he got the first year bounce, and it was just so disappointing to lose, and I suppose in the manner we lost. And who knows? Like I know Galway beat Derry in the semi-final, and Derry Galway went on to one. You just never know, and it was very disappointing. And you're right then, it was definitely the changing of the guard, and I remember Simon Hegarty would be sitting, and these new young boys coming in, and boys coming in with their dancing gear hung up on hangers, and we knew this is definitely time for us to get out, and rave, is it rave music you called it, Benny, that you used to play? We knew our time was getting short, but listen, you look back on it, and apart from some of the bad losses, you wouldn't change it. Great times.
Great times. And Malone used to say you always avoided the sing song on the bus. So you used to just mind yourself. Tony, you know what? Fascinating stuff. I mean, it was. I think 98. Probably there's one Tony I remember going through. I fisted at you a wee bit high, and I beat my own man. It was 1-1. I think it was Lockhart was there. I should have stepped inside and planted the thing, you know. It's always a regret of mine. People was getting on to me, but always not passing the ball enough, which I know I wasn't doing. But that time, I wish I had dropped the shoulder and went inside him. And there was another moment in that game, Tony. Anthony Malone, or Toehill catches a 45 from Manus Boyle. John Duffy punches it into the net, out of his hands. Clean goal, which the ref, for some reason, blew for a free out. Nothing at all wrong. And that goal would have probably swung it our way, in such small things that, you know, it can change.
Mankey wasn't. Mankey wasn't anywhere. He ended up in the square, but he was in full flight. Outside the square, back of the net, and in a game, you know, where it was always going to be sort of low score and fine margins, a goal for us then was massive. I think that may have put us 5 points ahead. Like, and it was one. It made it all the more sickening to take. That's for sure. But you know, 98 will always be remembered as a low point. You know, because that squad put in. You know, Declan and everyone put in a savage amount. Remember, we lost Roper in the warm up across. And the pitch member and the warm-up in Clonus. And like Roper was a good big player for playing very well that year. There was just a couple of wee things didn't go our way on the day. And you need that bit of luck, but we didn't have it that day.
Yeah. And Tony, you know, you obviously got involved. You were doing bits and pieces of the club. You got married. You obviously had five daughters and plenty of sport and blood in them as well. So you know, it was a lot to combine in life between all the sport, family, obviously your job on the road. It was a busy time, don't you? Managed to pull it all together. It must have been a challenge, I would say. Many today.
It would, but as you know, it's probably a bigger challenge, and they don't get the credit for Kathleen being at home looking after the kids. You know, when all we're worried about is getting to training and preparing for matches. You know, but listen, you sort of know once you, like, I was 2001 when we went to Kildare, and I didn't, like, Hegarty knew he was going. I was sort of still in my mind, because you're always wondering, is there anything left? And we broke up that time, and listen, Mickey was the manager the following year, and, you know, I didn't get the call. And I've often said it, there's very few people that you know, retire on their own terms. You know, Canavan, obviously, with the shadow of the Hogan stand and the Sam Maguire under his arm, you know, there's few and far between. But listen, yeah. I myself, between the knees, not holding up, and that, I probably didn't have much to offer. But I always remember McEnough saying, he was it 2003 the got to the semi-final, was it? Or 2002, right. McEnough, when he was back involved, he said he would have liked to have Michelle and Hegarty on the bench just for a bit of experience. But listen, I suppose, Benny, you'd asked earlier about, you know, making my debut in a All-Ireland semi-final. I loved it, you know. But it was, as you got older, you started to get doubts and you started to get nervous, because you were just worried that have you lost that half a yard, or have you still the power, you know, that kind of stuff. So, it was, listen, I just look back on great, great, great times. You know, you meet so many great people from within your own county and other counties, and it was absolutely fantastic. But, like, as you said, still heavily involved, minor board chairman of the club at the minute, and I found my management level. I've managed in the under 13 girls in Dunloan. We've won two championships back to back, so I think I'll retire maybe from the management on that score.
Yeah, Tony, brilliant. I mean, you're talking about all the people you meet personally. It was brilliant to meet you, of course, and the fame, your 107 appearances for Donegal, of course, an all-star when you won the All-Ireland 92. And I think if we had a poll for the top 14 full forward ever, I think it would be over pretty quick. You would go so far ahead. And that is the legacy of Tony Boyle. For now, obviously, still plenty of chapters still coming on there, Tony. But listen, thanks a million for joining us on the DL Debate. That was a pleasure talking to you.
No bother, Benny.
Right, now a new feature on the show. Because of the COVID-19 and a lot of people looking towards nutrition and health and well-being has become a big issue. I've been talking to a friend of mine in Derry, Vincent Sweeney. He is a gym, he does personal training, and he played football, soccer. We have to call it in this show soccer at a high level. League of Ireland and Irish leagues with various clubs. So I'm introducing Vinny Sweeney. How are you, sir?
All good, Brendan.
Good man, Vinny. You're a Derry man, of course, and you played with various clubs at senior level around the League of Ireland and Irish League.
I will. More of like the Clifton-Bull and Ballymena, and then starting off over Limavady and stuff, forgetting and building way through. But fitness and this massive lifestyle for me. You know, once I got injured from the ACL, and I'm done then, just the really, really ambitious and the rehab of it, and that's my goal now, is to help young players, the prevention, better and cure, you know, for like picking up them injuries. Because I never done a squat before, and I never done strength work properly, and this is how the body broke down for me, and then really educate myself through it, and becoming a personal trainer, and then going strength and conditioning coach, and it's a big market for it, for helping the next generation of footballers and anybody in general with fitness and health. The way COVID-19 even come across is that your health is your wealth. You know, God forbid, if it did really happen, you picked it up, at least your body can fight that as well, have a standing chance. You're fit, you're healthier, and looking after your health is the most important in your body, is the most important thing that we have, you know, mentally as well and physically. Yeah.
Preventative, Vinny, is you're looking to obviously prevent injury, prevent sickness through health and nutrition, which, as I say, there seems to be a big focus now more than ever on that, because people have a wee bit more time. So, Vinny, you're obviously one of those people that can inspire. You know, you're up bang early in the gym doing PT. You've got that energy about you, which is something that you want to go and help people as well. And recently, you've taken on some serious challenges to put yourself to the ultimate limit and find out a lot of things about yourself.
No, for me, like I'm a visual learner or taking action. There's definitely cases for like the 4 miles every 4 hours or 48 hours with the prep for the 100 miles. It's just getting everybody up and being inspired, because they were just locked in lockdown. And the most important thing that I watched and seeing is people's mental health going. When they fell in the momentum in the morning, I always get up at 4:30 in the morning, quit the cold showers. My breakfast is 700 milliliters of water. I'll have a small bit of fruit, maybe berries, maybe even an apple. You know, it doesn't really, just spike on the insulin again, get the metabolism going. And these are basic things that we're not taught, you know, and I didn't realize how many people would, like, not even buy into it, but just say, you know, is this how your body works? You know, at the end of the day, you're sleeping for, whatever, 8 hours and you wake up. You know, how do you speed that metabolism, get yourself working again? It's just putting the water back in from dehydration and then getting up in physically. If you want to go and work out, take a walk, anything that's active. I mean, you don't have to do a crazy workout. It could be just 30 minutes activity every day. But if you're doing that every day and you add it up at the end of the week, that's a lot of work done. You know, it's, and that's where I feel people get caught up sometimes and they think they have to go to the gym for 2 or 3 hours. No, they don't really. 30 minutes activity every day or maybe 3 times a week, whatever you can fit in. It's very important for our mental health or physical. You'll feel better about yourself. You know, even food is very important. You know, what you fit, but what you put in, protein, carbohydrates, you know, and basic stuff with the fruit. You know, right, you know, people get mixed up on it. And there's a lot of information out there through social media and different things, but it's really the basic things that we really need to be taught coming up. You know, it's porridge is really good. Most of us know from the Irish family that the slow-release carbohydrates and, you know, and basic things of, you know, fruit that's going to spike your insulin and give us that energy right through the day. You know, if you're going to go to work for 8 or 9 hours and stuff like that. And hydration, when we need 3 to 4 liters of water per day, but most people don't even take 1 liter. And most people don't even take a 0.5 liter. So how are we really functioning properly if we're not really doing the small things right? And that's what it all comes down to. It comes down to the education, you know.
Yeah, brilliant, Vinny. So what we're going to do is I'm going to meet you during the week. We're going to set up some links into the podcast, whether it be through video or audio, around advice. We might even set up a wee module of training. And we'll just get some links together, Vinny, and start to promote. So whoever wants that advice, as you say, there's a lot of different stuff out there. Sometimes you just need somebody to say, right here, I'm an expert at this. This is what I do. This is where you're at. No matter where you're at, this can be your starting point. And as you said, even if it's that 25 minutes to half hour, just to get you started, get your metabolism going, which then makes you want to eat the right foods anyway and just shakes the body up rather than you getting into a bad way of going, because it's the start of training is the key, Vinny. And listen, I needed myself at the minute, an operation not that long ago, and I've fallen way back in fitness. So I'll be starting off with you, Vinny. So that's what we've got coming up. We'll have that ready for everybody next week, and we'll start to do tips and advice on nutrition and training on the weeks going forward.
You know, that's where comfort becomes, you know, it's comfort is what we all seek. You know, and me included, you know, when I do a long day work or I've done a good session or whatever, we seek comfort just for, like, it's just, it makes us feel nice. But without me doing something really productive for the day, I don't feel like I'm earning something until I sit down and watching TV. But for some reason, people like to do this before they put themselves out there and they struggle. But there's something about competition or repetition or training that makes you release them endorphins and give you them chemical reactions that make you feel good. And it makes you feel good for the rest of the day and people you're around. Everything becomes better. And when the problems you do face that day, you can always give them solutions, you know. And there's many things for it. There's, you know, training is so important. And that's the thing that we want to go on deep into and figure out where these can help you, you know, in your lifestyle. You know, if you just even give 10 minutes even starting off, you know, I'm not asking you to do massive things, but I will, like, I've tested my body for 100 miles run in 24 hours or the 4-4s, whatever, but these are things that we are capable of, but we never push ourselves to that limit, you know, and so we're living through of, like, we're reacting to life instead of living our life. And most people now are going out doing their garden, spending time with family, and all these things through COVID-19 has taught us that, you know, these are things that are very important as well, like, not just working hard and forgetting about our health, and that's definitely the most important, physically and mentally, you know.
Vinny, brilliant. I'm really looking forward to this. And as I say, personally, I need it myself as well. So I'll be in touch with you later on in the week. And thanks for introing this. And watch this space. We're going to get everybody fit and healthy in the Northwest here again. All right, Vinny, I'll be in touch.
Appreciate it, Brendan. All the best, buddy.
My next guest, you'd have to say, some people have a certain ability to describe the action. And My next guest certainly is that, a maverick in many ways. He's an author, he's a reporter, as we would know him best. Also a poet. I see quite a bit on Facebook there. It's the one and only Jerry McLaughlin.
Brendan, how are you doing?
Very best, Jerry. At all, Jerry. Great to have you, sir. Great to have you. Jerry, just looking back at your life there, your life absolutely steeped in GA. You're born in Mineleck, and you would have grew up around, you know, the Beleek Club and the Ayr Club. But it was a small ball that really won your heart.
I suppose it was, yeah. Brendan, hurling was a very big part of my life, and the reason for that was that my father in the field when he was digging spuds, and when he'd pick up a stone, most people would throw it sort of sidearm. He'd throw it on their hand. And I asked him, why did he throw it on that? Oh, he says, that's the handball swing and the hurling swing. And then he says, Jared, you're too small and too light. You mightn't be strong enough for football, but you could play hurling. And that stayed in my mind. And then in 1972, my mother had big ambitions for me. I was 14 at the time. We had just won a Donegal under 14 football championship, by the way. Sean Boyle, captain of that team. But there was a De La Salle brother came around recruiting to get guys to go to a monastery, if you like, and he was recruiting for us to go to Castletown. Brother Brendan was his name. And the big selling point for me, I asked him, will there be hurling there? He said, of course there will. So that was me. Didn't have much of a vocation, really. But I went to Castletown in Laois, and I hurled with guys in Laois. And then I was in Waterford the following year, and I hurled with really better hurlers in Waterford. I hurled along with, actually, Ken McGrath's father, Pat McGrath, and I hurled with John Galvin, and they were really good players. And I suppose that's how it developed on. I went to UCG then in 1975, played with Joe Connolly, Joe McDonough, Frank Coolan, Connery, all better players, I asked that again. But hurling has given me some wonderful moments. I played with Fermanagh, Brendan, for 22 years, 1975 to 97. Played in four Ulster finals, an All-Ireland Junior final, and National League Division 3 final, and we didn't win any of them. And incidentally, Brendan, in the final in 87, your first cousin, Nick O'Dowd, beat us on his own. He was brilliant. Anyway.
And tell me, Jay, see those hurlers, those big names you've mentioned back to your Fitzgibbon days, had they a huge influence on bringing you on? Is it something you feel that, you know, I suppose Fermanagh would have been a weaker county in hurling, that type of, you know, person in terms of the influence, was it huge on you? Did it make you a better player?
Oh, it did. The only thing they weren't fit to instill into me was discipline, because I was, and I still am, a bit of a maverick. But I'll always remember Joe Connolly. There was a meeting for a freshers team in a certain place in UCG, and I didn't have the confidence to go in. And I looked in, and there was about 10 or 12 or 13 lads in there, and I was turning back, and I met Connolly. I just kind of knew him from the papers. He says, are you not going in there? Ah, I says, sure, I'm from Donegal. They'll all be clear. Oh, he says, come on in. So he took me in, made me very welcome, and I managed to get my place on the freshers team, and I ended up hitting the freeze for them. And that was a great confidence booster for me, because there's not too many guys from Donegal that would play in UCG. Danny Cullen, who'd be a much better hurler than I am, by the way, he really distinguished himself in UCG. But yes, you're right, Brendan, those big names, they really gave me confidence. And just when I'm on the hurling, to wrap it up, I suppose I was born under a wandering star, really, because I hurled with Aaron Gales Beleek. We won four championships, five senior leagues. I hurled with Arua Ballyshannon. I hurled with Navo in Sligo. I hurled with Melvin Gales in Leitrim. I hurled with Liam Mellows in Galway. I hurled with St. Paul's in Antrim. I hurled with Commercials in Dublin, and a few others that I can't remember. And I never had any inter-county transfer. So I reckon, Brendan, if I had been really good at the hurling, they'd have been after me.
I mean, that's an amazing story in itself, Jerry. I mean, the clubs all over the country,
yes,
that you've,
yeah,
represented, the people you've met. You know, you initially, Jerry, took up a teaching role, but then you know, your ability to write and your love of GA started to bring you in towards journalism, and you took up the call in there.
Yeah, I did. I taught for a year briefly in Ballyshannon from 84 to 85, taught English history and Irish, because I graduated in history and English. But I don't think I was cut out for that. And it's funny how you get into journalism. It's a strange one, because I was kind of half singing. I had a much better throat than I have now. I was warbling at a folk festival in Derry Vanley in October 1987. drink as you do. And then this young woman came up to me, it must have been 1 o'clock in the morning, she kind of knew me, and she came out with a great line, which sort of hooked me. She says, McLaughlin, if you're half as good at the writing as you are the bullshitting, she says, you take up the writing and give up everything else. Now, I was kind of half interested in her, so the only way that I could get into journalism then was to stay with her, so I did, and I started to do notes for the Fermanagh Herald, and then I did a postgrad in journalism at UCG, 88 to 89, and I was with really good writers there. I learned of people like Harry McGee, he's a political correspondent now with the Irish Times, Ethna Tynan, most gifted writer with the Sunday Tribune, and a girl, a lady that you might know, Anita Guidra, who lives out in Remelton, and for many years she was the Northwest correspondent for the Irish Independent. So all my life I've been lucky that I've been close to gifted people, and I believe that it's a learning process, but journalism is a wonderful thing, and then when you have the GAA with it, it gives you that bit extra, Brendan, you know.
Yeah, and Jerry, you do loads of broadcasts as well, obviously BBC, RT, you're fluent Irish speaker, Radio na Gaeltachta, Northwest Radio, Ocean. You know, you done so much in that time, Jerry. Obviously covered the magic of 1992, and a bit like I always say myself, Jerry, being there in 2012, you know, doing punditry at the game, like I felt really blessed and honoured to be like part of the, you know, what was happening around the game, the reporting of the game, and you felt exactly the same.
I did, yeah, and 1992 was very special, because even though Brian McNiff and the boys were confident of winning, a lot of us, myself included, I thought, oh, geez, you know, we're not going to beat the Dubs. And then when we did it, it was brilliant. And I'll always remember what happened when the final whistle blew. It was like in slow motion. I could see Charlie Collins, I could see Charlie McKinley, Kieran O'Donnell. Everybody was just going mad in the press box. It was bedlam, but it was magnificent bedlam. And there was a female journalist beside me from County Armagh. All I remember was throwing her arms around me, so I was well comforted there in those great moments. And then being out in the Grand Hotel in Malahide, you know, it seemed like the whole of Donegal was there, Brendan. I know this has been spoken about, and seeing the Malloys up on the stage and seeing Daniel O'Donnell, that was a day of days.
Yes, and you even found time to do a book, Local Legends, for Manna. Quite an undertaking when you go for something like that.
Quite an undertaking. There were 82 interviews that I did for a newspaper, now sadly defunct, called the Fermanagh News, and it was with people from all walks of life. And of all that I've done, that's given me the greatest pleasure, because it's not really my book. I know my bylines on it, but it's the people. There are 82 authors. It's their story. It's something that needed to be done. It's like a social history. And Peter Quinn launched the book for me, and Father Brian was there, and Brian McNiff was there to give me a wee bit of a slagging off, but I don't mind that, because he's a very old friend of mine. But no, that was a great thing, and the proceeds from that book are going to Rockfield Community Centre. I got 500 copies printed, and we've sold about 350, so I'm happy enough there. But speaking of local legend, you're probably aware of this, I have 49 local legends done in Donegal, and you're one of them, as you know yourself. So I have one more to go, and that's going to be 50, and I hope to put that into a book too. Now, that's about 50 GAA people in Donegal, all walks of life. I'd say Spud Murphy is the oldest in it. He gave me some great stuff going back to the 1930s. But anybody and everybody's in it, and they're my choice. So if there's any flack to come about somebody not being in it, well, I'll take the flack.
You're well able for the flag, yes. Jerry, no problem. Jerry, what, you have an interesting story about a guy was sent off in two different countries,
yes,
in the same day.
Yes, that won me a lot of friends, but I think it might have won me even more enemies, because it was 1992 and it was in the Irish News. The guy's name was Eddie Duffy, and he was playing with Oma St Enda's, and the manager of Oma St Enda's that time was the great Mickey Moran, so that, and Declan O'Neill was the chairman. He went on to be drunken. But anyway, to cut a long story short, Eddie was playing over in London on this Sunday, but he was needed also in Tyrone on the Sunday evening. So he was playing for a club. Now, I can't remember. I think they might have been the club's favourite, playing against Tyrconnell Gales. But Eddie was in a bit of a quandary, because he had to get back. So being a kind of a rough diamond, excuse me, but being a kind of a gentleman, he sort of shook hands with his opponent and apologised to him, and then lapped him, knocked him out with a box. Sent off right away, dashed to the airport, was flown right over to from London to Aldergrove to play the match in the evening. There, some of the OMO officials came and collected him. He was playing then against Arbow at about 8 o'clock. Didn't the row break up, and didn't Eddie get involved and was sent off? Now, I didn't know anything about it, but I had a very good source in East Tyrone, and she phoned me up, and I managed to get referees' reports, and I came under a lot of pressure, actually, from the hierarchy in the GA, not to, but I ran it, and it was ran as a front-page exclusive, and there's not too many front-page exclusive GA stories in Irish news. Nick Garbutt was the guy, and he came under pressure too, but we ran the story, and yeah, it was a good story, but there's a few guys that still don't talk to me, but you're here, c'est la vie, you know, it was a story, and it was true.
Yes, Jerry, it's brilliant. Well, it is, Jerry, it's always great to see you at games. And Jerry, tell me, Derry and Tyrone now have a roadmap for coming out of lockdown. Donegal haven't put theirs forward yet. What do you think is going to happen next? Are we going to wait for a sign from Croke Park?
No, I see Frank Craig's an interview with Ed Byrne, the secretary of the CCC, and he says it'll take about 2 weeks for it to materialise. But I think the word comes from Croke Park is, and from Alan Milton, the PRO guy, is that, you know, they're leaving it up to the county boards and clubs. He reckoned that it would be insulting the county boards for Croke Park to make a dictate. I think they will come up with something. I think Donegal, I think it seems to be swinging towards the two groups of eight, which means clubs get quite an amount of matches. So, and I think most clubs would be happy with that, Brendan, because, you know, if they only got two or three games after being out for so long, they mightn't be. But, I mean, let's hope it happens. But there's another interesting thing that you mentioned now, and it's a big debate going on in our club, and I say in every club. I mean, this is the 15th of June, and young lads are gathering all around the place. They're probably training on beaches, training on rough bits of ground, maybe 14 or 15, blah, blah, blah. But they can't train on their own pitches. There's a lack. I know Croke Park are very good, very careful, but there's a lack of logic there, Brendan. I see no reason why they couldn't bring forward the opening of the pitches by a week. That'd be a week extra to prepare, rather than lads having to wait now, you know, a full 2 weeks before it opens. I don't know what your view is on that.
Yeah, listen, same thing. I mean, the idea of not being down in our pitches now, and you think of the close connection we're having with people, say, in shops, etc. Mm. Whereas if you're out in the pitch, surely that's safer as long as everybody keeps their distance. I mean, if you look at even down below me here at St. Eunan's, a massive space out the back and that,
yeah.
Surely there's a way we could organise training there safely. I know that they wanted stewards there. But as long as it was organised sessions for a couple of hours, a few times a week, as you said, people are going to rough bits of ground and going to the beach and that now. So not a lot of sense there, Jerry. But hopefully soon, hey, I'll see you back in that commentary box. And that book would be a good idea, second book. I think somebody could actually pen one on you. It would be very interesting, Jerry, looking back at that.
A solicitor might have looked at that book very closely.
Jerry, always great to talk to you, sir, and I hope to see you soon, my man. Thanks very much for
joining
us.
Cheers,
on the day. Right, folks, that's a wrap, episode 16. Thanks very much for listening. It was great talking to these three great men there, my hero Tony Boyle, Vinny Sweeney, and of course the maverick Jerry McLaughlin. I want to thank Kenneth up on Highland Radio for producing, and of course our sponsors at the Dry Arts Complex. That's all for this week. Looking forward to next week already.
The DL Debate, brought to you by the Dry Arts Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.